are so glad that you are listening to the Mission Point Community Church podcast. It's our prayer that this helps you grow in your relationship with Jesus and encourages you to show and share the love of Jesus everywhere you go. Thanks for tuning in. Now let's dive into the message.
Today, I get to continue in our sermon series that we're calling Remember the Future. Scott Green always comes up with unique titles for our sermon series. Remember the Future. That doesn't make sense. Well, it does make sense when you think that this series is all about looking back in order to look forward. It's the idea that we don't face the future by guessing. Instead, we face it by remembering. When we remember and intentionally recall God's faithfulness in the past, then we can move forward in the future with confidence to trust him with what is ahead. Pastor and author Mark Batterson said it this way. He said, "Long vision isn't just the foresight to see far into the future. It's hindsight that finds perspective in the distant past. It understands that history shapes destiny. It recognizes that testimony is prophecy." And then Soren Kierkegaard, he's a 19th century Danish philosopher and theologian. He put it this way, and I really like it because it's short and simple. He says, "Life can only be understood backwards, but it must be lived forwards. Life can only be understood backwards, but it must be lived forwards." And that's what this series is all about. That's what it's all been about, looking backwards in order to move forward. So in week one, Scott guided us as we looked at the Israelites in the desert and how quickly they forgot what God had done, like saving them from all of these plagues and parting of the Red Sea, which were pretty miraculous things, and yet they forgot what God had done. You see, we saw that if we don't intentionally remember what God does in the past, we'll start living as if he hasn't acted at all. So sometimes our biggest struggle is often not what God is doing now, but that we've forgotten what he's already done. You see, we have to remember the future. In week two, Rick talked to us about Mary's song in Luke chapter one, the Magnificat. He made a joke about a Magnificat, but that's neither here nor there. And he told us that that we're part of something bigger than ourselves. And because God is faithful and we remember all that he's done, then that can shape what we pass on to the next generation. And then last week, Rob, our new lead pastor, he shared that Jesus is our rescuer. And he helped us look at the story of David and Goliath in a new and fresh way, and helped us see that we need to remember our rescuer, that we need to remember our rescue story, and we need to remember our rescuer's faithfulness. Because that's how we remember the future and move on into whatever God has for us with confidence, being able to live on mission with him because we remember his faithfulness in the past. And so today we're gonna lean into a really honest and a little bit of a hard question today. And that question is, what do we do when it feels like God is late? What do we do when it feels like God is late? Right? When the timing of God showing up in our life and in our circumstances doesn't match up with what we expected and it wears on us. What do we do when God seems to be late? Just an easy softball question today. But to get us started, let me share a quick story, so maybe something a little lighter. Many of you know that I am a type A personality. I like being on time and I hate being late. For me, if you are not early, you are late, right? Anyone else in the crowd feel that way? Yeah. All right. I mean, I knew I'd have a few people, right? But here's the problem. I have a little bit of a problem sometimes, just sometimes. I'm not good at estimating time. I'm a classic overpromise and underdeliver when it comes to estimating time. My wife is right down here, and I'm sure she would tell you, actually, if you ask her, she will tell you that when she texts me and says, "Hey, when are you coming home?" And I say, "Leaving in 5 minutes," or "Just about to leave the office." Oh, she knows that that's gonna be another 30 to 45 minutes or so, and I will be late as she has dinner on the table. You see, inevitably, I will get lost in what I'm doing, and I'll lose track of time, or I'll get into a conversation with one of our staff or something, and you know I'm a talker. And so the reality is that I will be late to what we're doing, and I'll end up having 3 text messages and phone calls from my wife saying, "Where are you? Dinner is on the table." And this actually happened to us recently. We had to leave at a certain time after work to drop off food at a friend's house and then go to our son's track meet about 45 minutes to an hour away. And here's the deal. I got caught in a conversation with one of our staff members, and it was my fault, and I pushed the time to the limit for sure. And needless to say, my wife was not all too happy when I arrived at home. I literally pulled up and she was standing at the edge of the sidewalk waiting for me as we were getting ready to go. And she was not very happy. So I could have made excuses and I could have shrugged it off. And I told her that track meets don't ever start on time and stay on time anyway. We're going to be fine. But I knew that was not a good idea. So I did what any wise husband would do at that moment. I closed my mouth and then we drove in silence all the way to Middlebury to the track meet. So all the way there, I was silently hoping and praying that we didn't miss our son's first event. I was praying that maybe they just had a timing issue or something, or it seems like the track meets are always behind and those kind of things. Or maybe the opposing team had a traffic jam they got caught in. And so they had the state start the meet later than they had hoped. But unfortunately for me, that was not the case that night. This was the first track meet of the season that started on time and stayed on time, of course. So after driving like an angel out of heaven to get there, I slammed the car into park. We didn't even get our bleacher seats or blankets out or anything. We just beelined to try to get in, pay for our tickets, and get to the track. And we hustled in as fast as we could. And fortunately for me, and I will say for my marriage, we got to the track just in time to see our son towing the start line with a few seconds to spare before the gun went off for his event. And we got to watch him run a great 800 meter race. You see, the reality is we made it. So although we felt rushed and anxious, we actually weren't late. We got there right on time. Now, I didn't say that to my wife. Right? I will say, however, that I don't think I'm going to try to push the time limit that close in the future, and I would not recommend it for the sake of relationships or basic survival or access to a warm bed at night. I've hopefully learned my lesson, although my wife is over here shaking her head saying probably not. So why do I tell you this story of showing up to the track meet just on time? Well, it actually is a great setup for our passage today, and as we unpack it, we're going to see that people thought Jesus was late, but I would contend to tell you that I don't think he was. So if you open your Bible to John chapter 11, that's where we're going to land today. We'll also have the verses up on the screen. And I always like to stop at this moment in the service and say, if you don't have a copy of the Bible, we would love to be able to get you a physical copy in your hand. So you can always stop by the connection corner or guest services after the service. And we would love to be able to gift you one of those today. The folks there would love to give you one before you leave. And before jumping into the chapter of John 11, I need to give a little bit of context as well, because earlier in this chapter, we're introduced to a man named Lazarus. He was a man from Bethany who was seriously ill, and his sisters, Mary and Martha, send word to Jesus, and they're trusting that Jesus, he's going to come and he's going to heal their brother. And so the situation sets the stage for what we think is urgency and expectation that Jesus is going to come and do a miracle and heal their brother. But the reality is, surprisingly, Jesus hears the news and he chills out for a little bit. He doesn't go immediately. Instead, he delays for 2 whole days, and he explains to his disciples, he's like, "Hey, we're just going to hang here for a few minutes, and the reality is this is going to be ultimately used to serve a greater purpose." And then Lazarus actually ends up dying, and yeah, Jesus even describes him as he's just asleep, using language that points to what he's about to do. And that's where we're going to pick up the story in verse 17. So take a look at John chapter 11, verse 17. It says, on his arrival, Jesus found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb for 4 days. Now, Bethany was less than 2 miles from Jerusalem, and many Jews had come to Martha and Mary to comfort them in the loss of their brother. I'm just making sure. Okay, it is up there. It's not on my screens down here. So I wanted to make sure you guys were seeing it. So those two verses there, this is where we see that Jesus was apparently late. He was late. He got word that Lazarus was sick, and he didn't go and heal him. When he arrived, Lazarus had already been in the tomb. He had been dead for 4 days. That's a long time to not be there. 4 whole days. And here's what makes it even more striking. It wasn't that far away, right? Bethany was only 2 miles from where he was. 2 miles. That's not even a long walk necessarily, right? I live in Winona Lake. People run a 5K or walk a 5K, seems like every Saturday from like May to October, right by my house every single week. 2 miles is not that big of a deal. It's nothing. So the question naturally comes up, why didn't Jesus just go? Why didn't Jesus go and heal him? I mean, they called for him. We read that he received the message. He knew the urgency. He was sick on his deathbed. And he was close. It's not like he had to travel 3 days to get there. He was close. And not only that, verse 19 tells us that many other people made the trip. Other people showed up. Friends, family, neighbors, mourners. They were all there to comfort the family and support them. So why didn't he? Was he too late? Or did he intentionally choose not to come when it made the most sense? You see, this detail in the story, it matters. The author of this text, the Apostle John, telling us that Lazarus had been dead for a few days is just his way of emphasizing that hope isn't just fading in this situation. It's gone. It's gone in everyone's eyes. Hope is gone. He is dead. He's been in the tomb for 4 days. The moment has passed. The grief has settled in. He was needed and he didn't show up. Where was Jesus when it mattered most? Where was he? And that's the emotional weight of this story of Lazarus. Right? Not just that there was a death. That was hard enough. But there was delayed presence. His delayed presence. He was not there. But this is what I love about Jesus, because he doesn't erase that feeling when he shows up. Right? It's into that space of those emotions and that feeling and that disappointment that Jesus steps in. Not to a situation that looks salvageable. I mean, it looked all but done. But to one that everyone has agreed is finished. He says, I'm going to show up. Which is where there's a tension in this story. And this is where it really lands. And that delay does not equal absence. Delay does not equal absence. You see, we often interpret delay as absence, but that's not how God works. You see, we can often feel that when God doesn't move on our timeline, that must mean that he's not moving at all. He's not doing anything because it's not on our timeline. That's certainly what was happening in this story of Lazarus and Mary and Martha. So maybe for you, it's like waiting in the hospital room, praying for healing, and each passing day feels like silence. So by the time the diagnosis does come, we've already decided that what God must be doing or what he probably isn't doing. Or it's like applying for all those jobs because you got laid off. And you send out all of those resumes for weeks and weeks and you hear nothing back. And by the time the rejection or uncertainty settles in, we assume God must have stepped back from me. Or it's like praying for a marriage to be restored, but the distance between you keeps growing. And after enough time passes, it stops feeling like we're waiting on God and starts feeling like, man, maybe God just isn't even in it anymore. Or it can be like walking through a season of a mental health struggle, of depression or anxiety, where the breakthrough that you've been praying for just hasn't come, and it's not coming any quicker. And over time, the silence starts to feel like it's confirmation that it will never get better. It's never going to change. Or maybe like standing at a graveside, just like Mary and Martha were about to experience, and every hour of delay feels like confirmation that hope did not come in time. But that's exactly where Jesus can often step in and do some of his most meaningful work. See, Jesus doesn't often arrive on the time frame that we would choose, but here's the deal. He still arrives. He still arrives. He still shows up. And when he does, the story isn't over, even when everyone else has written the ending, like in this story of Lazarus. And that's what Martha thought as well, right? It felt like that was it. It's over. Look at verse 20. Martha says this: when Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went out to meet him, but Mary stayed at home. Lord, Martha said to Jesus, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But I know that even now God will give you whatever you ask. See, I imagine Martha being overwhelmed with grief, but also carrying a deep sense of disappointment, because she knows that Jesus could have done something. Right? We see in the text that Mary doesn't even come out to meet Jesus. And I wonder if she was so distraught and so disappointed that she couldn't even get herself out of bed. I don't know. And when Jesus does finally show up, it's been 4 days. 4 days of mourning, 4 days of questions, 4 days of wondering why he did not come and show up and do something. And what comes out of Mary's mouth, or Martha's mouth? If only you had been here. If only you had been here. Don't miss what's underneath that question. If only you have done what I wanted you to do when I wanted you to do it. You see, there's grief in her words, but there's also blame. It's like she's saying, Jesus, this didn't have to happen. Jesus, this didn't have to happen. You could have fixed this. You could have done this. You could have done something to make this better. Where were you, Jesus? Where were you? And I don't want to be too hard on Martha here, because if we're honest, that can be a posture that we can fall into, isn't it? We do this in the middle of our storm too, right? We ask questions like, why me? Or why now? Or God, what are you doing? In the midst of a trial or difficulty, we can get into the if-then-only cycle as well, don't we? If only you had healed. If only you, God, would have provided. If only you had shown up when I asked. God, I've been waiting. What's taking so long? See, we want God to operate on our timeline and do what we want him to do. We want immediate answers. We want immediate healing. We want immediate resolution. We're human. And when it doesn't happen, when the silence is deafening, and sometimes when the situation gets worse instead of better, the questions can grow in their frequency and their intensity. Questions like, God, do you even see what I'm going through? Are you even paying attention? Don't you care, God? Why are you helping them and not me? Did I do something wrong? Have you forgotten me? Have you forsaken me? How much longer do I have to endure this? How much longer is it going to last? You see, when we get to that point, those questions slowly and subtly, those questions mean we shift from trusting God to questioning him. From bringing him our pain to blaming him for it. And just like Martha, we might find ourselves, maybe not out loud, but in our hearts saying, Jesus, if only you would have been here. If only you would have been here. Maybe we find ourselves in that place today. But we're going to see what's going on in this story. There's a little bit more. Just because Jesus didn't show up when they expected doesn't mean that he wasn't working. And just because it feels too late doesn't mean that he is out of time. You see, Jesus told his disciples earlier in John chapter 11 that this was going to be used for a greater purpose. Right? Look at verse 4 of chapter 11. There it says, Jesus said, "This sickness will not end in death. No, it is for God's glory, so that God's Son may be glorified through it." You see, Martha didn't know it yet, but Jesus was up to something. Jesus was up to something. You see, God is always working in what we cannot see. He never stops working, even when we don't see it, even when we don't feel it. Because the reality is, delay is not denial. It's often preparation for something greater. Delay is not denial. It's often preparation for something greater. And that's what Jesus was doing in this story. Something greater. Something more than they could even think or imagine. A miraculous sign to help them believe in who he was and to glorify the Father. And that's what Jesus is always doing. It's how he works. And we have to hold closely to that when we're in the middle of a difficulty or a crisis or a trial. I mean, the Apostle Paul reminds us of this in the book of Romans when he says in Romans 8:28, "And we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose." He has a plan. I know it sounds trite, but it's true. He has a plan. He is with us. He will show up and show off in ways we cannot fathom. But it is most often not on our timeline. Most often not on our timeline. It's on his timeline, which is hard for us because we want it now. We want relief now. We want resolution now. We want immediate results. But then I love how it goes on, because Jesus goes on to explain even more to Martha. And then he's going to ask her a really crucial question that cuts to the right to the heart. So look at verse 23. It says, Jesus said to her, "Your brother will rise again." And Martha answered, "I know he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day." Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live even though they die. And whoever lives by believing in me will never die. Do you believe this?" You see, Martha thought she understood. I mean, she had good theology, right? She knew the right answer. Jesus, yes, Jesus, I know. Someday in the last day, in the future, Lazarus is going to rise. I get that. But Jesus wasn't talking about someday. He was standing right in front of her saying, "Hey, Martha, it's not an event. It's me. I am the resurrection and life. I am the resurrection. I am the life." And then I love that there's more going on than she could see. There was more to this than even she in that moment could even grasp. He's like, "I'm the resurrection and life. I'm standing in front of you." And that's true for us also, isn't it? We see what's right in front of us. We see the loss. We see the disappointment. We see the delay. We see what didn't happen when we thought it should happen. But God is working on a deeper level that we cannot understand. We just have to accept that, right? It's like the prophet Isaiah said, "For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, declares the Lord." You see, what we see is often surface level, but God is always doing something deeper. He's always doing something deeper, and he was trying to help Martha see what he was about to do. And then I love that Jesus asks her a very straightforward question. And not just to Martha, but to us. Do you believe this? Do you believe this? He's not asking Martha, "Do you understand everything?" He's not, "Hey, Martha, can you explain it?" Not, "Does it make sense right now?" But do you believe this? Do you believe this? Do you believe this when life isn't going the way that you planned? Do you believe it when the prayer that you prayed has not been answered yet? Or the relationship is still broken? Or when the job hasn't come through? Or when the diagnosis doesn't change? Do you believe this in the middle of whatever mental health struggle you're going through? When it feels like you're doing all the right things, but nothing is shifting? Do you still believe that He is the resurrection and the life? Do you still believe that He is present? Do you still believe that He is working, even though it feels like nothing is happening? Do you believe it? And you see, this is where faith gets real. Right? It's easy to believe when everything is going well and everything is up and to the right. But do you believe this? Jesus is inviting Martha, and I believe us, through this text to something deeper. A faith that trusts Him when we don't understand Him. A faith that trusts Him when we don't understand Him. A faith that says, even though I don't see it yet, I believe You are who You say You are. Remembering His faithfulness in the past in order to move forward into the future. So I want to ask you, do you believe this? Do you believe it? In the middle of your trial, in the middle of your tribulation, in the middle of your difficulty, do you believe this? I mean, we all walk in here on Sundays and we look great and life is going well. And maybe for some of you it is, but in a room this size, the reality is that some of us are going through some really tough stuff right now. And if I'm being honest, this isn't just a question I'm asking you. It's a question I'm asking myself. It's a question I've been asking myself for the last year or so, because the reality is, I'll be completely transparent, it's been a tough year. There have been moments where things didn't go the way I hoped, or prayers that felt and still at times feel unanswered, situations that haven't resolved or didn't resolve on my timeline. And in those moments, I've had to come back to the same question, do I believe this? Do I believe it? Not when it's easy, but right in the middle of the tension, right in the middle of the waiting, right in the middle of not understanding. Do I actually believe that He is who He says He is? And I'll tell you the truth. There have been many days where that felt like a choice that I had to hold on to over this last year. But what I'm learning and what I'm still learning is that faith isn't something, and my trust in Jesus isn't something that I have to have it all figured out. But the reality is that it's just coming back to Jesus again and again and again and again, choosing to trust Him in the middle of whatever I'm facing. Choosing trust every single morning, saying, I'm going to trust Him again. I'm going to trust Him again, and I'm going to trust Him again. And I think that's true not only for me, but it can be true for you. It sounds simple, but it is not easy. Now, I love the way Martha responded, because she answered Jesus' question with an emphatic yes. Look at verse 27. It says, "Yes, Lord," she replied, "I believe that You are the Messiah, the Son of God, who is to come into the world." Martha is essentially saying, I don't know why You didn't come sooner. I don't understand why this had to happen, but I still believe in who You are. And that's a good example for us, because that's what trust in Jesus often looks like in real life. Not complete clarity, not all of the answers, not everything lined up perfectly, but just faith-filled trust. Martha is anchoring herself in who Jesus is, when she cannot understand what He is doing. You see, Martha knew that trust is choosing to remember in the middle of uncertainty. That's what trust is. Trust is choosing to remember in the middle of uncertainty. Our faith in Jesus holds on to what God has done when we don't understand what He is currently doing. Our faith in Jesus holds on to what he has done, his faithfulness, his goodness over our life, over all of our life, when we don't understand what he is doing. See, we remember how he came through in the past, which will strengthen our trust that he will come through in our current circumstances, even if it happens to be later than we want. Because he will show up. So when I don't understand, I still trust. When I don't see it yet, I still trust. When I don't feel it, I still trust. When I feel like Jesus is late and I'm wondering where he is, I still trust. And that's what was required in this story with Mary and Martha and all of those who were standing there that day. But the cool thing is, Jesus did show up. Jesus did something they never thought possible. Look at verse 38, and then we can see what happens to Lazarus. Jesus, once more deeply moved, came to the tomb. It was a cave with a stone laid across the entrance. "Take away the stone," he said. So they took away the stone. Then Jesus looked up and said, "Father, I thank you that you have heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I said this for the benefit of the people standing here, that they may believe that you sent me." When Jesus had said this, Jesus called out in a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out!" And the dead man came out of the tomb, his hands and feet wrapped with strips of linen and a cloth around his face. Jesus raised Lazarus from the dead. You see, he showed up, not just in a small way. He showed up in a big way to make the most impact on all of the people there and to glorify his Father in heaven. He showed up big at just the right time. See, to Martha, it felt late. To the crowd, it looked over. To everyone there, the story was finished, but Jesus wasn't late. He stepped into that moment with faith, where faith had run out, so that his power would be unmistakable. Where his power was unmistakable. He did it at that time so that his resurrection power was undeniable. That it was all about him. Nothing they could have done. Nothing they were thinking was possible. But he showed up, and his power and his love and his grace showed up in that moment. Just like I showed up to that track meet right on time. Not late, not even early, exactly when I needed to be there. Jesus did the same for Lazarus and Martha and Mary and everyone that day. And that's how Jesus works, because he is always on time. He's always on time. So here's what I want you to hold on to as you walk out of here today. Whatever you're facing, whatever seems too heavy to carry today, whatever seems like it's hopeless, whatever seems like it's never going to change, hold on to the fact that God's timing may feel delayed, but his faithfulness is never absent. His faithfulness is never absent. He has shown up time and time and time again, and he will do it for you right now in whatever you're going through. May not be today, but he'll show up. I can guarantee that, because he is faithful. He will do it again. Even if today is the hardest day you've had to walk through, he will show up again. I believe this. I believe it. I'm holding on to that promise for myself and for you. Because Jesus is never, ever late. So whatever tomb you're standing in front of today, whatever situation may feel like it's too far gone and it's never gonna change, whatever you've already started to give up on, I pray and I want to implore you to trust him. Trust him in it. Trust him in the middle of the storm. Easier said than done, I know. But trust him. Hold on to him. Even though you may not see it or feel that he's working, he is working in whatever circumstance you have. And let me say this. The reality is, if you hear nothing else, hear this. The voice that called Lazarus out of the tomb is still the same voice and the same God who is calling dead things back to life in your life and in my life. He's the same God. He is the same God. And when he shows up and he speaks and he says, come out of the tomb, everything changes. All for his glory. I believe this with all of my heart, and I hope you do too. Let's pray. God, we thank you that those are such true words, God, that you have never left us nor forsaken us. No matter what we face in this life, that you are faithful and that you are a God who will show up right on time, who will be there in the midst of the storm. When we believe that all hope is lost, when we believe that there's no more looking forward, when there's no way that we're going to make it one more day, that you show up, God, right on time. So God, as we worship now in music, with song, remind us of the ways in which you show up. Remind us of the ways that you've done that in the past that can speak into our current realities and our current circumstances. Meet us in this place, we pray. And it's in his name, his mighty and precious name, in the name of Jesus that we pray. Amen.
Thanks so much for tuning in to today's message. We would love to personally invite you to one of our Sunday services at 9 or 10:45 a.m. in the Performing Arts Center at Warsaw Community High School at 1 Tiger Lane in Warsaw, Indiana. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please make sure to subscribe and connect with us on social media by following Mission Point CC. You can also contribute to what God is doing through Mission Point. Simply visit missionpoint.net/give and give a gift today. Thanks again for joining us. Have a great week.